Tomorrow, I plan to be speaking with Miss Angela Marshall. She is a busy lady, and she is experiencing some levels of success, which is great. She's going to speak with me about success and how to respond when others may not like your success. That's right, how to achieve success and how to respond when others don't like your success. Angela Marshall with me tomorrow at 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock on Wednesday, as we bring back that first hour of this previous Sunday's broadcast, I'm going to rebroadcast my conversation with Kent Annan. He's written a book entitled You Welcomed Me, and in this book, he does an outstanding job of sharing statistics and scripture that let us know how Christians really should be responding to the plight of immigrants and refugees. So that is this Wednesday. This Saturday at 1 o'clock, Dr. John Caldwell will be speaking with me about war. His focus is going to be anatomy of victory, and more specifically, what led to some of the victories, what led to some of the draws, what led to maybe what may be considered losses of wars that America has engaged in over the centuries. So Dr. John Caldwell, political scientist who has done so much work in this area for I think about 50 years. He's been at it for a while. He will be our guest. I want you to truly be listening out. We will also be talking about the power of intimacy. That's right. We'll be talking about that Saturday. That'll be part one. And Sunday, part two. Both days are going to be significant. They're going to have some very, very important principles that we'll be laying down. But I specifically want to mention again what I shared with you last week about Sunday's broadcast of The Power of Intimacy. I'm going to have some special principles, facts that I'm going to be sharing with church leaders about the power of intimacy and ways that our leaders can help our families experience that power. That's this Sunday. But have no fear. I know a lot of you will be in church. You'll be having worship service. Some of you may be doing something else like eating immediately after service. No problem. You can go to speakingwith.com and click on the link that is labeled Listen Online at your convenience. And you'll be able to pull that up and you'll be able to hear what we'll be sharing about the power of intimacy. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, we're going to have more and more situations being created by mankind that are going to make it more and more difficult for us to truly have good relationships, whether at work, at our places of worship, even in our homes. And so we're going to have to deliberately work to make those relationships beautiful so that we can make our homes, as you hear me say so often, places of refuge. And so for that to happen, of course, that means both parents, or if there's only one parent in the household, that one parent, and all the children, everyone who lives in there, grandparents, everyone who lives in the household, will need to be on board with that plan to make home the refuge. Because we're going to need more and more times to rest, to reflect, to refresh, to relax, to regroup. And for many, the best place to do that will be at home. For many. Not for all, because we know that in the real world, you're going to have people in families who are going to be creating drama no matter what. The ironic thing about it is, the more drama they create for everyone else, the more drama they create for themselves as well. And we do indeed reap what we sow, one day or another, one way or another. And so I definitely want to encourage you, ladies and gentlemen, let's go for the peace, especially at home. Okay, so here we go. We've done two cons where the position is stop the animal testing. Now here's the second pro. They're saying that really we should continue the animal testing because there's no adequate alternative to testing on a living whole body system. And that's what they said now, a living whole body system. Living systems, like human beings and animals, are extremely complex, and I definitely agree with that. Studying cell cultures in a petri dish, while sometimes useful, does not provide the opportunity to study interrelated processes occurring in the central nervous system, the endocrine system, and the immune system. Evaluating a drug for side effects requires a circulatory system to carry the medicine to different organs. Also, conditions such as blindness and high blood pressure cannot be studied in tissue cultures. Computer models can only be reliable if accurate information gleaned from animal research is used to build the models in the first place. Furthermore, even the most powerful supercomputers are unable to accurately simulate the workings of complex organs such as the brain. I've got to say, I agree with that point. I made a, you know, short comment about the con, so short comment about the pro. All right. What are you thinking, ladies and gentlemen? So far, does it sound like one side is making their point just as well as the other? Do you think that one side is making a stronger point so far? Now, we have some more points, so don't stop thinking through this yet. I still want us to truly listen to and think about both sides of this. All right, so here's con number three, where their primary point is that animals are very different from human beings and therefore make poor test subjects. The anatomic, metabolic, and cellular differences between animals and people make animals poor models for human beings. Paul Furlong, who's professor of clinical neuroimaging at Aston University, says it is very hard to create an animal model that even equates closely to what we're trying to achieve in the human. Thomas Hartung, professor of evidence-based toxicology at Johns Hopkins University, argues for alternatives to animal testing because, quote unquote, we are not 70 kilogram rats. Okay. Pro number three, where their primary point is that animals are appropriate research subjects because they are similar to human beings in many ways. Chimpanzees share 99% of their DNA with humans, and mice are 98% genetically similar to humans. That sounds kind of scary to me. Chimps sharing 99% of DNA, that's scary enough. When you're talking about something like a mouse that looks so different, 98% genetically similar to humans, I'm not saying they're wrong, I'm just saying that's scary. All mammals, including humans, are descended from common ancestors and all have the same set of organs, for example, the heart, kidneys, lungs, etc., that function in essentially the same way with the help of a bloodstream and central nervous system. Because animals and humans are so biologically similar, they're susceptible to many of the same conditions and illnesses, including heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. All right, con number four. With the primary point being that drugs that pass animal tests are not necessarily safe. The 1950s sleeping pill, thalidomide, which caused 10,000 babies to be born with severe deformities, was tested on animals prior to its commercial release. Later tests on pregnant mice, rats, guinea pigs, cats, and hamsters did not result in birth defects unless the drug was administered at extremely high doses. animal tests on the arthritis drug Vioxx showed that it had a protective effect on the hearts of mice. Yet the drug went on to cause more than 27,000 heart attacks and sudden cardiac deaths before being pulled from the market. Pro number four. Animals must be used in cases when ethical considerations prevent the use of human subjects. So when testing medicines for potential toxicity, the lives of human volunteers should not be put in danger unnecessarily. It would be unethical to perform invasive experimental procedures on human beings before the methods have been tested on animals, and some experiments involve genetic manipulation that would be unacceptable to impose on human subjects before animal testing. The World Medical Association Declaration of Helsinki states that human trials should be preceded by tests on animals. I don't know. What do you say, ladies and gentlemen? Back in a few.